Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 13 of season 5 of Our Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Rennie Harlan directed and Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Niall McGowan from the Bat Minute. Welcome back, Niall.
Hey, I would have had a quip prepared, but there's not much dialogue in this minute, so. It's me. Here I am.
Hey, it's a restricted area. So, minute 13 begins with John making a request and ends with John trying to show he has some sort of authority. So, yesterday we ended things with John finally finding where Cochran went, and he got a homeless sky cap to help him out and open the door, and he tells the sky, he asks the sky cap to open the door. And the sky cap says, why? And he pulls out his badge and goes, because I want you to open it. That's why. a little pretentious, if you ask me.
It could be like, it's like, oh, goddamn cops just wafting around their power. Just like, that shield just gets you whatever the hell you want, I guess. But
apparently it does.
At least McClane's usually, he's usually on the right side, you know. So
that's true. And then I love how he goes, "Is there a cop on duty around here?" You know, and shouldn't he know the answer to that because he just left Vito and his partner?
Okay, but maybe he just wants to get rid of the guy, I guess.
No, my interpretation of it is he's actually looking for a real policeman. You know, not because he knows that Vito, they're airport police. So
yeah.
You know, the airport police might not be the same as the regular police, depending on how you look at it. I don't know. Maybe John doesn't see them as real police.
That's the thing, though. Unless he specifies this guy, he could just show up with Vito again. He's like, God, no, I'm at a real that's cop. True. God damn.
Right. You know? Well, he says there's the airport police. He goes, then he like whispers to him. He goes, go get him. So I did a little bit of a search to see like what is the airport police? Like, what's the difference between airport police and regular police in the city and stuff like that. So, I mean, basically they are the security agency that's assigned to deal with all law enforcement functions in airports. They do patrols, investigations, traffic flow management. They deal with the airport emergencies, like in this movie. They will provide safety for airport employees and to passengers. I guess that's why they need a SWAT team there. Sometimes you can find them at security gates and the terminal outside, I guess, doing parking things also. In some cases, they are branches of larger police agencies. And in some places, they are the sole, they're just deal with the airport, stuff like that.
It kind of reminds me of you ever see, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Sure.
And is that one of Ed Helms keeps showing up as like he's like a policeman for the post office or something. He's like whatever but he has a real swinging dick about it. He's just really into like how important being the mailman's police squad is.
It's like, right.
They kind of treat it as a bit of a joke, but at the same time, it's like, well, I get like every time I watch Die Hard 2. And you get into Dennis Franz's office. I'm just like, holy crap! Is it really this big? Like over here, you might get like you get security as you're going through like the baggage claim and stuff, or when you're putting your baggage claim through to go to the other side to get on the plane.
Right.
But like, it looks like he's running an entire police precinct, and it's like such a big office. It's so like freaking like. But at the same time, I've never been to like an American airport.
Well, I've been to many airports, but I've never been to the police area of the airport, which is a good thing.
Let's just say even like particularly in like maybe in Dallas, it's like, oh no, there's a huge like it's in America's nation's capital. Of course, there's a big police presence there because God knows who's what level of terrorism could be coming in and out. You need this level of police, but every time I'm like, you really need this much in the airports? But
it is Washington D.C.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. So it could be this is entirely accurate, but or going to be the actual Dulles security squad. You're just like, no, it's like me and three other guys. Like, this is nothing like that. I wish my office was that big, but but it's nothing compared to it. But yeah, I think really Dennis Franz's whole thing too seems just like all day, every day. He is just like, oh, Jesus, commissioner's on my neck and doing it. Like, he seems like a real cliched kind of cop as well. About right. Like, just, I'm just trying to keep this thing running. It's like, it feels as if when there's not giant, you know, friggin' jailbreak terrorist incidents happening, he's still stressed all the time. So,
well, because he's so busy, because he's got so much to deal with there. Not just around Christmas.
But technically, too, I guess, because Vito is not pulling his weight. So he's... Although maybe Vito he's too ruthless with the parking things. He's like, I've got to process all these parking tickets that my goddamn brother keeps sending my way.
That's the point. If it's his brother, it means that he doesn't really have much faith in Vito. If all he's doing is giving him to be dealing with parking tickets.
Yeah. But then Vito, he takes pride in his work, I guess, because he's not no how is he letting McLean's mother-in-law's car go. But
That's true. Yeah. What do you think are the two largest airport police units in the U.S.? Where do you think they're located?
I would assume New York. Just because New York just always seems bustling to me. So I would assume, like, oh, yeah, there'd be a lot of people coming in and out. So I would guess New York and maybe Washington itself. Because, again, yeah, it is the nation's capital. Like, it could be, if there was ever to be a threat coming into the country, you would think if they wanted to target something, they'd be targeting Washington, D.C. So maybe that's where you need it. But
okay. So, first of all, you're correct that New York is the largest, because in New York, they have the Port Authority Police Department, which is, they deal with all the different, a whole bunch of different areas. You know, they deal with JFK and LaGuardia, and they also deal with Newark. The Port Authority deals with buses and trains and stuff like that. It's all together. That's why it's one of it is the largest police agency dealing with airports, and the second largest is the Los Angeles Airport Police.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they have over 1,100 personnel, 450 police officers, and they deal with LAX, and they also deal with there are other airports there. You have Los Angeles Ontario, Van Nuys, Los Angeles Palmdale, and stuff like that to deal with. So yeah, those are the two big ones.
My perception of what LA is like is so weird, because I just always think of like, oh, like Hollywood. And then you always have to be reminded, like, no, LA is a sprawling city that, like, most of it's, like, not that. Like, right. It's,
it's true.
There's a lot of derelict areas and stuff. It's not the nicest place. There's obviously beautiful places to live, but there's also, like, complete dives there, too. It's a massive, massive city. But I always forget about LA. In my mind, I always imagine it as being, like, oh, it's like a little small celebrity enclave. And then they're like, no, millions upon millions of people live there as well who aren't, could be impoverished for all you know, but they still live in LA somehow. But
right. It's true. So basically, John at this point tells him to go get the police. And then he opened, the door's now opened. He walks through. The fact that that the porter opened it with a key basically tells us that Cochran had a key. He didn't need a code or anything like that. Nowadays, I'm assuming that would all be a code. You'd rarely find that you have to deal with keys in a place like that. Maybe they would have cards that you can swipe or something like that.
And also not to knock the guy's performance, but like now the fact you've told me that it was like a homeless guy they randomly found. As he's doing, he's doing a good job of, like, okay, I'm now looking for a cop, and I see someone, and I walk away. But it also now kind of looks like they had something on, like, a fish hook. And he's like a cat, wandered, like, his eyes are just darting around, like, whoa, oh. And then he kind of, as if they had something, like, over here. And then he just, like, walks off camera.
But you're right.
He's doing a good job, but
it's unfortunate they didn't hire him for other movies after this one. He does a good job of looking like a luggage guy who's just gotten spooked.
Yeah. And also, did you ever see the movie Human Highway?
No, never heard of it.
Neil Weirdly enough, has Dean Stockwell of, we were talking about Quantum Leap the other day. But yeah, Neil Young directed weird cult movie. It's got a reputation for being terrible. I actually think it's actually pretty good. But it's, and it's got like soundtrack by Devo and stuff like that in it. But Dennis Hopper is there, but it's at the height of Dennis Hopper's drug binges. And he's clearly been directed by Laser Pointer. Like his eye, there's a little red dot that's visible, and his eyes are always following it. And it's clearly because he's off his head, and they're just like, Dennis, just walk over here. And he's just like, he kind of shuffles over in that direction. It's a bizarre sight to hold. I don't know. If you can get
sounds very strange.
It's a very strange movie. It's a weird, weird movie. Again, it has a bad reputation. If you think you can get it on YouTube, though, although that was a couple of years ago when I saw it, but it's one of these things that feels like it's ready for like a renaissance. The people will be like, yeah, Human Highway. Wasn't that bad after all this time. But that, my main thing is that I remember it's like, oh yeah, Dennis Hopper clearly in a bad place and clearly been directed by Laser Pointer. It's very bizarre to see. But yeah, this is that guy's motions kind of reminded me of the, okay, I'll go over here now. But although I say that.
Because you have Rennie Harlan and whatever funny. Like waving him over. This is the way. Look over here. Look in this direction.
Yeah, totally. But the thing is, he might be, he didn't need that direction at all. He was just that good an actor, and he just didn't get a. Unless you never know, maybe he went on to Broadway. Maybe he leapt up to do stage work from this. But
could be.
His exit stage right was so good in this movie. They're like, that man on the boards.
Yeah. And then we see John inside the baggage area itself. Lots of luggage and lights and stuff like that. I mean, I love the way that they make it seem as if this is, you know, they have all the flashing lights and stuff like that. It's much busier than or it feels much busier than it probably really is.
Oh, this really struck me as some, pardon my French, but some movie bullshit.
Yeah.
Is the like, yeah, I'm sure if you went into these actual places, it's probably like a sterile white room. There's no steam everywhere.
That's all right. This
it feels like probably the most boring place in the world to work. But
it looks like an amusement park.
Well, the really struck me is, and this is weird because it comes out pre-Terminator 2.
Yes.
But it felt as if they were trying to go for like the steelworks at the end of Terminator 2. Like, oh, that was a big climactic scene.
Well, maybe it's vice versa. Like, maybe yeah, James Cameron saw Die Hard 2 and said, that's what I want. That's what I want for final scene.
He saw Robert Patrick doing that, like a sitting duck. He's like, that's the guy. That's my new Terminator right there.
There you go. You see? It worked.
Yeah. James Cameron's like, I want that scene, but I want it somewhere that's not, you know, a luggage place. I want it somewhere cool. So
yeah.
I'll put it in a steelworks where it's actually, there's an actual sense of danger around all the time.
Yeah.
It's like a mixture of that, and I'm also kind of expecting to see like some Ugnaughts running around because it's got a real carbonite freezing
chamber. Always looking for Ugnaughts,
From Ireland, either looking for leprechauns or Ugnaughts, and you know what is a leprechaun if not an Ugnaught with a little green hat? You know, you're just on the lookout for them constantly over here. I do love it as a. I say movie, I mean that in the most affectionate way.
Yeah, possible. Of course, because they want to make it seem so much more pleasant and you know that they're also trying to distract us, which works.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's much more of like, well, you know, the first one had all kind of cool, like, oh, we got all these buildings, the scaffolding, and you know, uncompleted floors and the Nakatomi roof and stuff. It's all good, cool places to have action scenes. And it's like, well, an airport, not so much, but if we can spruce it up. If we can add a bit of a kind of, you know, a bit of an atmospheric sheen to it. So like, what, you know, you go into the baggage place, it's just a slow moving conveyor belt. But like, no, wow, they were like steam powered and it just has jets of steam spilling out everywhere. And there's big like emergency lights because it's so damn dangerous.
Yeah.
Even though the conveyor belts are moving so slowly. And stuff. You never know what could be in these things. God, like, you know, God forbid there's a friggin' like a bomb in there or something. You know, there's always this like. So I admire them for doing this. And to be fair, later on, you'll cover it, obviously, in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
They get some dangerous stuff out of it. You will believe you could die in an airport packing area.
That's true. And that's, I think, one of the things that they surprise us with here by doing that. But
yeah.
But we'll get to that next week. But, I mean, I like the way that they make this area seem so much busier but empty at the same time. Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. Like, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
Cochran.
You'd think there'd be someone there.
That's the thing. Did they have to go? Is there like a bunch of bodies lying around that those guys have offed a load of people? Because it seems like if it's this busy a room, like just in terms of how much is going on, that you would need guys there all the time. You'd need maintenance
people. Correct. You have to make sure that something doesn't fall off, one of the conveyor belts.
Or maybe there is. Maybe it is usually a really dull white room, and because they've taken out the guy, all the emergency lights are on, the machines are short-circuiting and spouting steam and stuff like that. So McClane's like, holy Christ, somebody must have died in here because
I don't know.
Someone should be keeping an eye on this place.
Right. I mean, and also you can hear the conversation between Cochran and Miller, which is really weird because first you hear like a little bit of laughing and then you hear one of them say, hand me the wrench. And then the other one goes, going to work overtime. And then the answer is, good idea. Okay, hold that end. Watch it, man. All right, perfect, perfect. Good to go. So, I mean, is this is this real dialogue, or is this they're just faking it to make it seem as if they're really working there? Because like last week we were talking about it when the two guys got out of the van before they went into the church. So they were also saying, grab your toolbox. You know, they were talking normally as if they were playing those characters.
Mm-hmm. Well, so if you've got the script there and ain't in the script, I'm assuming it's all improv.
Well, we haven't gotten to the script yet, so I couldn't tell. Yeah. I'm asking what you think about that. Yeah.
But I know these two guys. We'll talk about them. But like, you know, they're seasoned actors. They know what they're doing. I can imagine them coming out with some you know, they've been able to spin some improv on this. You know, but I'm choosing to believe they you know, they're not like they're a bit better than just standing there going like purple monkey dishwater, you know, like what is it, trying to come up with things to say. They're like, no, we've invested in the characters and stuff. We know what we're doing.
Right. Okay. That's fair. That's fair. So, you know, John is able to quietly get over to them. That's also a little strange here. You know, you think that these two guys are doing something very nefarious. We don't yet know what they're doing, but what's really strange is okay. You know, they're not on the lookout that someone's going to walk by. I mean, you said that it's possible that they've already, you know, killed two people. Actually, no, if they would have killed them, then later on someone would have said something about the fact that, you know, we found these two dead bodies or that you know, these two guys are missing. So apparently they didn't kill anybody. You know, apparently this is everyone's lunch break. You know, even though it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, maybe that's why Dennis Franz is so stressed. He's just like, there's literally, it's me. I am the airport police. I've not even got guys at the freaking baggage place working the freaking conveyor belts. I got nothing over here.
Could be.
It's Christmas week. I'm the only guy working. My stupid brother's out there handing out parking tickets.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we do see a few other cops, so it's not just them, but they're a pretty small force, I guess you can say.
Yeah. So like in that little period of time between Cochran going in the door and McClane talking to the sky cap guy, all you hear is a gunshot and like massacring people behind the door, and those like 6 seconds it took them to get in there.
Exactly. Well, no, Miller must have already been in there. You know, you gotta give him credit for that.
Yeah, maybe he's like in Simon's girlfriend in Die Hard with a Vengeance. He has like a little hook knife thing. He's been doing like a balletic stab dance in there the whole time.
That's right. There you go. And John like creeps over some of the conveyor belts, and you see him like step over, steps on and off and stuff like that, you know, doing a little bit of an obstacle course to try and get over to where they are. And then he's looking at the two of them. We see them from a distance that they're standing next to an electrical box or something like that. Then John, for some reason, decides to break the silence and goes, hey, this is a restricted area. What's the matter? Couldn't wait for the sky cap. And the look on their face is great.
Like I really thought his line was going to be, are you looking for the sky captain in the world of tomorrow?
Exactly.
They've got a little TV screen showing like a terrible Jude Law, Angelina Jolie movie.
Exactly. Now, later on in the movie, when they mention when the blue light team comes out and says that they found what these people were doing, they bring like this huge box that they use to connect something. There's no box here. There's no room for any box here. So I don't know where that really comes from. That's very strange. Because it's just like a circuit board.
Mm. It's yeah. I mean, well, you'll get to it.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm saying, I'm just looking at it from the perspective of now. And, you know, both Miller and Cochran are somewhat surprised that they were surprised.
Yeah. Oh, this is now the beginning of the, you know, the Gruber group. They wouldn't have been caught unawares like this.
Yeah,
like, this is shocking that they are. It's shocking that they're shocked by McLean coming in. You really think they would have had, yeah. But and again, particularly because they're a freaking military operation. That's right. What the hell
they
are
should
they doing?
Be, but, they should be on guard a little bit more. But maybe it's just so noisy there that they couldn't notice it. You know, that's what it comes down to.
I would have figured they'd have like more than two of them, and they would have a guy by the door to make sure no one comes in. Then, you know, we'll get to it next minute. But like, they don't even have like a good like story prepared.
Exactly. Right. Like, we'll talk about this tomorrow.
Save it.
Yeah, we'll save it. We'll give a reason for people to want to come back tomorrow and listen to us. You know, talk about this.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's all I have for this minute. You have anything else for the minute before we get into the script?
No. I think we can, because we're in this area now for the remainder of the week. So just
pretty much. Yeah. Okay. So in the script, they describe the area. It says luggage conveyor area, dark, clatters and bumps, machine sounds, more bumps. McLean moves cautiously along. He jumps as a large shadow moves nearby, but it's a big case of on a conveyor belt. Now he stoops to go under another conveyor belt. The different tracks intersect and pass each other like freeway off-ramps, discharging luggage from one to another. And then he sees Cochran and Miller. One has his jacket off, and just now dusts off his hands like a man finishing a job. The other one has one of those transceivers in his hand. McLean's voice. Excuse me. They turn, see McLean with his badge in his left hand, his right hidden under the long coat, which is draped over his shoulder like Clint Eastwood's serape in a spaghetti western. This is a restricted area. You boys too impatient to wait for the sky caps. So, again, you were right. They ad-libbed their work conversation that...
Yeah.
You know, but I love the description. They make it sound as if, you know, McLean is showing up like a, you know, like the man with no name.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't work that into the movie, really, because consider it too, like Last Man Standing.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis literally does play the man with no name.
That is correct.
They kind of remake it.
Yeah, but no one knew that yet.
But I'm surprised they fought the temptation though. But like maybe thought it looks. Maybe they did a take where it's like, oh yeah, have it kind of like the poncho or something.
Right.
Clint Eastwood wearing like, nah, it looks stupid. just have him standing normally or whatever. But
wearing your cardigan.
Standing, he's got like a take where he has a cigarette in the corner of the mouth. And he's, oh, you guys waiting for the sky cap?
yeah.
Not to be, unfortunately.
No, don't think so. All right, so every Wednesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Airplane Airport Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow related to either an airplane or an airport. So now you have a story for us.
Well, I was scrambling to think of stuff because I know... Like I'm on planes all the time, so I hop back and forth from Liverpool to Ireland like a couple times a year, but it's always very routine flights. So I was really like, oh my god, like I'm in airports all the time, but which is even weird because like the city of Derry Airport, they're like the lounge area where you're supposed to relax, is called the Amelia Earhart Lounge.
Ooh.
And it's like, why would you want to get on a plane? Like, why would you want to think about Amelia Earhart before getting on a plane? Like,
well, at least you're not flying over the Pacific.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, get ready because you might not come back.
That's right.
Yeah, but I know several things were like there's been flights I don't remember. Like, we were coming back from Brussels one time, and it was just one of those boozy weekends where. I just remember on the Sunday I was in Brussels and then waking up in my bed in Liverpool and been like, all right, guess we got back somehow. Somehow I got on a plane and flew back here. And there was a flight in between, but I don't remember any of it. And there's other times, yeah, like I remember me and my friend pursuing, and this will mean nothing, unfortunately, to you, Rob, but we were convinced we saw the BBC television presenter, Andy Peters.
Okay, don't know who that is, but that's fine.
He was a guy who used to host children's TV when we were kids.
Okay.
And we were stalking him. It was 99% probably just some guy. But we were like pursuing him like a dog because we were in the airport for several hours. So we're just like, oh, have to entertain ourselves somehow. But no, the only one that it's not related to me, unfortunately. But whenever people ask for like airport anecdotes, I just always think of my brother who he went on a trip to New York one time when back in like 2003, 2004, thereabouts.
Okay.
And it was pre a time when, you know, nowadays you do everything, you know, you're able to do transactions on card and stuff like that. And he said, like, yeah, his last day, he was down to his last dollar. You know, he literally had all his money exchanged, obviously, you know, the Bureau de Change. And he only had $1 left. And as they were getting ready to go to the airport, he spotted a peep show, like a sleazy New York peep show, which was $1. And he was like, you can go into this place and see whatever they got to show you for $1. And, you know, but apparently also it was like in the height of summer and he was dying like a thirst. He was absolutely. So he's like, I could spend the dollar on a bottle of water or I could wait till it gets on the plane where they are obligated to give you water no matter what happens. You don't have to pay for it, which I don't think is even true anymore. I'm pretty sure they charge you for the water.
No, they don't. I don't think they charge you for it, but they, you know, and on some planes you have to actually ask for it. They don't automatically give it to you.
Oh no, I think I'm knowing like the I'm usually flying Ryanair.
Ah, okay, just like Ryanair. Ryanair, you gotta pay for it. Right now, you gotta go get up and take a piss. So whatever.
Yeah, yeah. They have, literally at one point they were considering putting like you know on buses they have the little hooks you hold on to.
Yeah.
They were going like, yeah, we're going to just have them, and people will add in more people to standing on the plane and stuff. It's like, oh, we'll make more money that way. It's like, isn't that a safety hazard? No, it'll be fine. Who cares if people die? It'll be fine. But yeah, so he then went like, well, you only live once, and decided to go for the sleazy New York peep show. And apparently was so depressed upon leaving that he just had to walk out after like 20 seconds because he was like, this is grim, man. This is his last memory of New York is seeing this. And he walked out and there was like a guy, like a janitor with a mop ready. And he went to walk in and he's like, no, I didn't do anything. Don't worry about it. Because a proper like taxi driver kind of like that.
Yeah.
That was the vibe of leaving New York he had.
Wow.
And yeah, then he spent his last dollar on that and then got to gasping for something to drink, but he got on the plane. But eventually, yeah, for whatever it is, like a 12-hour flight or something, he's just like, yeah, for the love of God, give me some water. But yeah, whenever someone thinks of like an airplane anecdote, that's the one I would think of. Because all my ones are just like, well, I'm on planes all the time. But tragically, nothing all that exciting ever happens with the...
Okay.
I'm very efficient with it. Like I'm down to like I'm a one bag guy too. Like I can't be bothered with. I never take things that have to go through the baggage claims or anything. I'm just always like, no, just one bag that fits in the overhead compartment. I can't be bothered with like going and collecting stuff and waiting around for the conveyor belts. I'm down to like the most efficient flyer I could possibly be.
Well, because you're concerned about what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, you might lose your bag because people are getting into a fight in the middle of a luggage.
Well, yeah. I mean, we'll get to that. Yeah, well, it's coming up now because apparently, like, there's going to be some disgruntled letters coming into Dulles Airport within the winter of
1989. Yeah, we've established this takes place in 89 because the plates on the car that gets towed at the beginning are expire in 90. Expire in October 90. So therefore, it must be that this takes place the year before because I doubt that Holly's parents would be, you know, driving on a car where the plates have expired.
I don't know. You know, so it depends how old they are, I guess. Maybe that's why, you know, maybe John McClane was getting on them. It's like, you need to get these plates changed. No, screw you. And then, like, look what happened.
You know? It got towed because the plates were needed to be renewed. There
you go. Yeah. I can imagine there would be just like, well, you know, your car got towed. Just like, I did tell you, like, what do you want from me? But like, ah, oh, go back to New York. Like, oh God, oh,
yeah. Yeah, seriously. All right. So now you want to once again tell people where they can find Niall McGowan.
One thing I'll mix it up this week, not this week, today, because I've been plugging Batman it all week, but I do also have a second show. Me and my friend, my co-host on Batman, John, we do Miami Minutes, which is a breakdown of the 1987 craptacular classic Miami Connection. If people haven't, are you familiar with Miami Connection? Miami Connection is a brilliant cult oddity of a movie that was made in 87 by a Taekwondo master called YK Kim. And it played the Cannes Film Festival. It was made for like $2 million or thereabouts. Such a disaster that like it just got buried, dead and buried upon release, sat in storage for about 20 years. And then the Alamo Draft House, someone found a copy of it and played it. And the crowd went crazy for it because it's like a crazy kung fu musical about biker ninjas. And it's so sincere in its message to like, oh, everyone should just be friends and get along and all this kind of thing. But also, here's a bunch of guys ripping each other's throats out and there's gore everywhere and stuff like that. The main actor can his accent is impenetrable. No one in there is a professional actor. Everyone's very, very blatantly a bad actor.
Wow.
But it's got an original soundtrack, and the soundtrack is amazing. It's genuine bangers in it. And when they called YK Kim to tell him, like the Alamo Draft House were like, "Oh, can we screen your movie?" He kept hanging up on them because he assumed it was a joke. And now, like, they flew him out, and he's played like live shows with the band in the movie. People love Miami Connection now because it's like The Room. It's one of those things. It's so bad, it's good, but it's got a much more lighthearted and much more sincerely wholesome kind of message about it. Because Room is a very cynical movie. The Tommy Wiseau of The Room. Where the Miami Connection is just a beautiful, like, heartfelt ode to, like, Taekwondo and friendship. And just, it's a real cheese fest. But it's so, like, it's terrible. But it's also brilliant. And me and John, because a lot of work, you know yourself, you know, Rob, there's a lot of work goes into movies by minutes things. You have all this research and stuff to do.
Yes.
We decided because there's literally no one in Miami Connection went on to do anything else. So there's no research to be done. So basically it's just me and John, no guests, riffing on Miami Connection and having a great time. So we're mid-run. We only do one a week. So you can catch up with it very quickly. But it's out like every Sunday and you can find it on Miami Minutes. On all your good podcatchers, and we're on, you know, all the social medias under the same name. Much more lighthearted and sort of nonsensical a show than Batman it is, but that suits the movie, I can assure you. If not to listen to the show, I highly advise people to seek out and try to find Miami Connection because it is genuinely great.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can rate, review, and subscribe to any podcatcher might be using to listen to this show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little